This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Some of us sleep too little, others too much. And then, of course, there are those who've got it just right. If you are in the third, shall we say, Goldilocks group, perhaps you'd be willing to call in a few minutes and share your secret, especially if you've ever had trouble in the past but then found a solution that works for you. For the rest of us, anything related to sleep is fair game this hour. The neurologist who founded the Charlottesville Sleep Center is making a return visit, ready to address more listener questions. And since the phone lines filled up pretty quickly the last time he was here, you might want to get your query in early. Would your life improve if a problem with sleep could be resolved? Then please do stick around. In less time than it takes for a power nap, our conversation begins with sleep researcher and treatment specialist Chris Winter. Not, of course, that you'd even think of napping through the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Sleep. How to tell if you are getting enough of it. What to do if you're not will be much of our focus this hour. If you've got a question, comment, or suggestion about sleep, we'd love to hear from you at 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, our phone number is 888-967-2825. Our guest is a neurologist who both researches and treats sleep disorders. He is director of the Martha Jefferson Sleep Medicine Center, as well as founder and president of Charlottesville Neurology and Sleep Medicine, Dr. Chris Winter. Great to have you back in the Insight Studios.
It's great to be back.
So, Chris, what do people most need to know about sleep?
That's a great question. I would say that people most need to know that sleep as a whole is, in my opinion, one of the most important things that we do. It's involved in so many parts of our health and our life that its importance can't be understated. However, I think tonight's sleep, for the listeners who are listening out there, is of questionable importance, if that makes any sense. So I think that a lot of individuals, let me put it in terms like this. For a basketball player, Kevin Durant's one of my favorite basketball players. He is a fantastic athlete. And I think basketball probably means the world to him. I'm not going to speak for him, I'm guessing. However, he can have a bad game. That's okay. Doesn't make him question what he's doing. Doesn't make him question the importance of basketball in his life. And I think people need to understand that while sleep's important, and they hear Dr. Oz talk about this all the time, that tonight's sleep, whether it works well for you or it doesn't, is not going to make or break you. And I think a lot of people, if they thought about sleep in those terms, would do a whole lot better than they're doing right now.
The last time we talked to you, which was early this year, you still had a book awaiting a publisher with the suggested title of Shut Up and Sleep. So two questions. One, how's the search for a publisher going? And two, explain the title.
I will answer those questions. The book is still sitting on my external drive. I have a representative, one of the editors of Men's Health Magazine, is very interested in helping me out with that. But to be honest with you,
that's right. Actually, you do advice work for a number of national magazines.
We do. And Men's Health has been fantastic to me. I think they're a great publication. If you can get past the cover of it every day, every month seems to say the same thing, just in a little bit of a different order. Something about your abs, best sex of your life.
But then there's a section on sleep.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a very well-researched magazine. I think it's great. They do a fantastic job of really making sleep a very important part of what they write about. So one of the editors there, Peter Moore, has been gracious enough to help me with the book. But to be honest with you, we've been so busy with other things sleep-related that it sat on the back burner, but
one of the reasons I had to ask you, Dr. Chris Winter, is because my sense is that the title, that only somewhat tongue-in-cheek,
yes,
you picked for this book that you've worked on for some time, sort of sums up your philosophy about something that might surprise people from a medical doctor who's researched and worked on sleep-related issues for some 20 years.
Correct. The title, Shut Up and Sleep, I came up with to be sort of thought-provoking and to be honest with you, jarring, you know, get people's attention. But there is truth to that. I think that in the same way that we talked about sleep being extremely important, it is. I'm passionate about sleep. I don't think there's anything more important than getting good sleep and having quality sleep be a part of our lives. People worry themselves far too much about their sleep, whether they're getting good sleep or not, what's waking them up, what's keeping them from falling asleep, which is very, very common. And I think the more people sort of relax and let their sleep happen, the better they're going to be. We don't question our appetite. We don't question our thirst for liquids. These are all primary drives. We can go out to eat with friends for lunch and not feel hungry, order a Diet Coke and move on with our lives and not get too distraught about that. However, if somebody gets into bed and their bedtime is 11 p.m. and they don't fall asleep right at 11 o'clock, it really can feel like some people like their house is falling in on themselves. So it's important to be careful of our sleep, make sure we're making healthy choices when it comes to sleep. But in the end, it's just one night of sleep.
You do see any number of people, both in your practices, the two practices that you operate in Charlottesville and this work that you do with professional athletes around the world. We'll talk more about that too.
Sure.
Where there are some very serious sleep problems.
Absolutely.
And there can be any number of people listening who are wondering if they might have a serious sleep problem. So to you listening, we are inviting you to call in and talk with sleep researcher and treatment specialist, Dr. Chris Winter, by using this number, 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825, or by posting on our Facebook page, where we are listed on Facebook as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And Chris, several people have already posted questions there. Here's one from Sue who says, is it possible to reset one's biological clock? I used to go to sleep easily at 10 every night and then wake up at 5 in the morning. But for the past few years now, I've found it difficult to get sleepy any time before 2 a.m., and that makes it difficult to get up by 6 to get ready for work. Is there something I can do to get my body back on its old schedule?
Absolutely. Sue's problem is very illustrative of what we would describe as being a circadian rhythm disorder, meaning that what her body and specifically her brain wants to do might not be matching up with the clock that's hanging in Sue's living room. So there are certain tendencies that we tend to follow, not always, but we tend to follow. The young people listening who are the young people who live in my house are all getting ready to go back to school on Wednesday, so this will be a very jarring experience for them, most likely. That young people tend to want to stay up late and get up late. And as a rule, as we get older, the grandmothers and grandfathers of the world tend to like to go to bed early and wake up early, or at least that's what they do. So there is a natural change in our circadian rhythm as we get older, and perhaps Sue's experienced some of this. But what seems like Sue is having more and more difficulty going to bed early, like she's wanting to become more phase delayed, meaning she wants to stay up later. She's saying it's harder for her to go to sleep before 2. So what I would say to Sue is this. If Sue is, in fact, staying up until 2, and it's important to define what it means to when somebody says, I stay up until 2, because a lot of people will have dinner, they sit down to watch Jeopardy, and they doze off and on from 7 o'clock until 2 when they go to bed. Well, that sleep counts. Just because you're sitting there in your easy chair or on your couch doesn't mean it doesn't matter. So the first thing I want to know from Sue is she truly staying up until 2 o'clock in the morning? That's pretty difficult to do. And now she's getting up at 6. So if Sue's to be believed, and I'm sure she's a very trustworthy person, she's going to bed at 2, she's getting up at 6, she's getting 4 hours of sleep per night. Most individuals in this situation are going to cheat and sleep in other places, meaning that, yes, during the work week, it's difficult for them to go to bed before 2 and get up at 6. But when Saturday and Sunday roll around, they sleep until noon or 1 o'clock. Or Sue may be taking very long naps when she gets home from work at 5 o'clock. So it's not really possible for Sue to be existing for any long period of time, only getting 4 hours of sleep at night. So what I would say to Sue is this. Don't worry about your bedtime. I would make it such that you're not going to bed much before midnight ever. And when midnight rolls around, if you feel sleepy, Sue, go to sleep. If you don't, stay up. Stay up till 2. Who cares? That's fine. Get some work done. Do a few Sudoku puzzles. I'm sure if you switch the TV around enough, you'll find Shawshank Redemption on at some point, which is a great movie to watch late at night. It's hard to turn off. So go to bed when you want to. But Sue, your homework for me is you must be up and out of bed every day by 6 o'clock. And that's weekends included, whether you work or don't. You're not allowed to sleep in. You're not allowed to take naps. And you're not allowed to go to bed before midnight the next night. And I assure you, within a very short period of time, your body's going to raise the white flag and you're going to fall asleep well before 2 o'clock in the morning.
So you reset yourself.
Absolutely. And you know, there are things that you can do. There's there are lights that you can buy that can help you do this. Northern Light Technologies sells some very nice ones that allow you to pulse bright light. For you, you're going to want to use it first thing when you wake up in the morning to help sort of reset that circadian clock. So, Sue, don't hide from the light when you wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning. You're not allowed to go down to your basement, turn on the Today Show, and put your head under a pillow. I want you to get up. I want you to exercise at 6 o'clock in the morning, even though you're going to feel like you don't want to do it. And the best place for you to exercise is either outdoors or in a gym where it's very well lit. And that's going to help you reset your clock. You want to eat your meals about the same time every day. That'll be very helpful to you as well, too.
Medical doctor and sleep specialist Chris Winter, our guest. 888-WMRA-TALK, how to reach us by phone. Jenny in Harrisonburg, thanks for using that number. Your question or comment for Dr. Winter, please.
Hi. I actually was diagnosed a while back, quite a few years back, with a primary insomnia. I guess just meaning, for listeners, meaning that there's no like external things that are keeping me awake. I just simply do not go to sleep naturally on a regular basis. And so I have, you know, for, I don't know, 10 or 15 years, have had to take some kind of sleep aid in order to go to sleep. Some years it was pretty heavy duty stuff. And I just wondered if there's anything that I can do so I don't have to take sleep aids forever.
So what Jenny's talking about is this entity called primary insomnia, which is a very debated topic within sleep medicine. So what Jenny's basically saying is that there is a failure of her brain to be able to initiate sleep by itself. And I'm a partial believer in this entity, Jenny. I think that our bodies do some things extremely well. I've never met anybody with a primary lack of appetite. I've never met anybody who said, you know what, if I don't take an appetite stimulant, I don't get hungry and I don't eat. So I've never met anybody with a primary lack of thirst. And to be honest with you, Jenny, I've never met anybody in my office who's had a primary insomnia, meaning insomnia we couldn't fix with either changes in terms of sleep schedule or changes in other things that the individual's doing with their insomnia. So there's nothing really more than the Ambiens, the benzodiazepines, the Lunestas of the world. So, you know, the question you often find with patients with primary insomnia is that despite their complete lack of ability to fall asleep, they're generally not particularly sleepy people. They don't tend to fall asleep during meetings. They're not falling asleep driving a car. They're not embarrassing themselves by falling asleep at their friend's wedding. They're actually quite awake people. They just have some difficulties in falling asleep. So, you know, I think that without getting into the details of what's going on with you and who made that decision, no, there's really nothing out there right now that would be particularly helpful to you. That's probably not something you're already aware of. But you know, I think that before you how old are you, Jenny?
6, and I was diagnosed.
I'm sorry, Jenny. We only caught part of that. How old did you say you were?
36.
You're 36. I would say before you live out the rest of your life as somebody who believes that you're unable to fall asleep without a pill, that perhaps you seek another opinion. We'd love to see you.
Okay.
Jenny, thanks so much for your call. 888-967-2825 if you want to talk with sleep doctor Chris Winter. Next to Elkton, Breanne, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was calling because I do everything that I'm supposed to do to have a good night's sleep. I keep everything dark. I wear earplugs, and I don't have screen time. I read a book before I go to bed. But all throughout the night, I have dreams, and they wake me up. And so I never feel as if I'm going into a super deep sleep.
Breanne, you've given us a fascinating question to hold us through the break. Can you hold on through the break?
Yes, I can.
We'll be back in just a bit more than 1 minute. Dr. Christopher Winter, longtime researcher into sleep disorders, is our guest. He is a neurologist who leads two different sleep treatment centers in Charlottesville. He also travels the globe consulting with a variety of professional sports teams on sleep-related issues. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We still got Brian on the line. Chris, you have a response to her concerns about dreams waking her up?
Absolutely, Brian. Thank you for your concern. This is a good one. You know, first of all, are your dreams negative? I mean, are you being chased by wolves? Tell me what you dream about. What did you dream about last night?
Well, surprisingly enough, I don't really remember my dreams last night because my doctor has prescribed me something, which I take on occasion when I don't get a good night's sleep for a couple of nights. But my dreams do go the spectrum of maybe what I'm worried about, but then also they'll go completely off the wall, and I might dream about a Fruit Loop being chased by Cheerios. I have a very vivid imagination.
How old are you, Brian?
I am 31.
31. Well, typically in the normal state, a human's going to dream about four to six times during the night in cycles that range anywhere from 20 minutes to 45 minutes to an hour, somewhere in that nature. And they tend to get longer as the night goes on. So generally speaking, if somebody's pretty well rested, when they get into bed, about 90 minutes after they fall asleep, they're going to start to dream. And they'll have cycles that repeat themselves with sort of relative regularity throughout the night until we wake up. And our biggest cycles of dreaming are usually right before we wake up. So one of the questions I'll ask patients when they come to see me or a client or an athlete is, do you dream? And it's sort of a loaded question because I know that most people, with very few exception, dream. The question really becomes, are you remembering your dreams or not? So, for instance, I don't remember dreaming last night, but I'm sure I did. You do remember dreaming quite a bit. And so what does that mean?
Very much.
What that means is that something is creating a situation in you, whereas when you dream, you're waking up from the dream. Because the only way you're going to remember waking up from your dream, remember your dream is to wake up from it. And if people out there have never had the experience of remembering one of their dreams, one of the easiest ways to kind of figure that out is to set your alarm clock about 20 minutes early tomorrow. And when your alarm clock goes off, you'll often catch yourself in your most vivid sort of robust REM cycle. So for you, Brian, I think what's happening is there is something disturbing the quality of your sleep. Mm-hmm. And it's creating a situation where when you start to dream, you wake up. And some of the most frequent things that will do that for an individual who's your age is that when we dream, we are paralyzed. Every one of us, everybody who's listening for the most part, with few exception, tend to, when they dream, their body becomes paralyzed. So all of your voluntary muscles that move you around, they don't work when you dream, including muscles that can control your breathing. So the most common story, it was the story of my mother, the way we figured out she had sleep apnea was that she said she dreamt all the time. And so what she means is she's not dreaming all the time. She's remembering her dreams all the time because she's interrupting them all the time. So she'll sleep for a while. As she starts to dream, that paralysis comes over her body. Her airway would collapse and she'd wake up to catch her breath and think, wow, what an interesting dream I was having of this breakfast cereal chasing the other one. She'd get up, get something to drink, go back to sleep. She'd sleep for a while, start to dream again. The same process would happen. And by the end of the night, when she woke up the next morning, she'd feel exhausted because she really felt like she was working throughout the night. I had another patient who often would dream she was helping people move. I can think of no other worst thing to dream. That is the most hellish dreamscape I've ever heard. That she would wake up and feel like she was moving boxes. She would wake up, get something to drink, go back to sleep, and she would literally pick up right where she left off in the last dream. And that was her complaint to us. So,
Dr. Chris Winter, are you thinking that someone like Brian might need a sleep study
absolutely.
To find out if she has sleep
absolutely.
Apnea?
I think you should talk to a sleep doctor. Don't let your primary care doctor keep giving you the medication I'm suspect he's giving you because it's going to have other effects that you don't want. Get to the bottom of what's causing you to remember your dreams, fix it, and move on with your life.
And Brian,
well, I'm very happy to have called you guys, and I'll probably be giving you a call later.
Sounds great.
So
good luck, Brian.
And in a few minutes, we're going to talk more specifically about just what a sleep study involves, so please stay tuned for that. We have this comment that came in early today on our Facebook page, Dr. Chris Winter, from Frank, who says, this may be off topic, but I am concerned about how little our society seems concerned about war veterans. Sometimes we hear something about PTSD, but mostly that's just how service people coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan are afraid to seek treatment. I would think sleep problems are even more common for our women and men in uniform who served in the war zone. Has Dr. Winter treated any veterans for sleep problems? Can he offer any general advice for soldiers who have now returned stateside and are trying to get their lives back to normal?
That's a great question. I think that, yes, there are a plethora of sleep disorders that we see in our veterans, including PTSD and sleep problems, which often go hand in hand. We have certainly treated a fair amount of those individuals. Often they are not coming to us for PTSD specifically. I think that we have certainly gotten referred patients who have that problem. But we often, in our dealings with these individuals, unearth it. So there's a lot of things that are going on with the war veteran, not the least of which is there's often a radical change from where they are sleeping, you know, being deployed in Afghanistan, being deployed in Iraq. They're dealing with jet lag, but they're also dealing with a radical change in terms of their schedule. And it's interesting, even taking the PTSD out of it, how many veterans we see or how many service people we see that have significant difficulty once they get out of the very structured sleep schedule of the military into a more civilian or contractor type role where now they don't have to be up at the crack of dawn. They don't have to do their PT and exercise. They don't eat their meals at exactly the same time every day. When you get an individual out of that environment, they can often have a lot of difficulty, and you would think that it would be the opposite. In terms of PTSD, absolutely, individuals go through very difficult things. They see things that average individuals would not even begin to know how to deal with. And so these things often start to creep into their nighttime routine. You know, they feel okay during the day, but when they sit down and the world is quiet and they're there by themselves in bed, they start to relive a lot of the things that they've witnessed or gone through in these wars. And it's very difficult for them. They want to turn their mind off. That's a very common phrase we hear from them. You know, Dr. Winter, I want to be able to turn my mind off and shut this off so I can go to sleep. But I feel like once I get into bed, everything becomes amplified and my mind just sort of takes on a life of its own. So,
and Chris, do I understand that actually what you do for people who have this kind of situation is tell them they have to do the opposite of turn their mind off?
Yep. And so, for instance, an individual who witnesses something very dramatic or has something very dramatic happen to them, their truck is hit by some sort of bomb and they're thinking about that. Often what the soldier will try to do is block that from his mind when he goes to bed. And what we often want them to do is we want them to sort of sit with that and relive it, to think about it every night when they go to bed. Think about the way things end. And in some cases, if individuals are dreaming about it a lot, we want them to rehearse a very standardized ending that's much more pleasing than the one that they're often thinking about. So what will often happen is, instead of the bomb going off and hurting these other people, the bomb goes off, and for some reason the truck has a shield around it, and everybody inside is safe. So even though that's not the reality, that's what we often will ask these individuals to address in their mind over and over. When you go to bed, turn the light off, think about that day, think about that car driving past that improvised bomb, the bomb going off, nothing happens, the truck keeps going, then you can go to bed. And what will often happen is the individual will start to bring that rehearsed dream into their own dreaming. And once the brain sort of has that sort of happy ending it's always looking for and it can resolve that issue, then the soldier stops dreaming about it so much. There's a lot of little tricks and things of that nature that we can use to help individuals sleep better. If they're on bad schedules, we can help them with that too. But I think Frank really hit the nail on the head when he said they're often reluctant to look for these solutions. I think that's part of Army culture in some ways, that these individuals don't easily seek treatment for these types of things that are often viewed as being, for lack of a better word, weak.
Neurologist and sleep medicine specialist Chris Winter, our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Got a couple lines open at 888-967-2825. Next to Stanton. Tom, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I, like many people, I'm sure, in our 24-hour society, work alternating shifts, and I know a lot of people work overnight. And I wonder if you would be able to comment, a doctor, on just how that might affect people in the long term. My own experience has been that I have to really be conscious of scheduling my sleep.
Sure, absolutely. How old are you, Tom?
49.
So Tom is hitting onto a big topic in sleep medicine, which is sort of the circadian shift work disorder. So this is a relatively new topic in sleep medicine, new in terms of it being recognized. There's nothing new about shift work. It's been going on since some guy developed the light bulb a few years ago. So Tom is a 49-year-old man who's calling in today probably because he's having some difficulty with these alternating shifts. Working overnight is a very unnatural state for the body. And I like what Tom said. Tom said, I have to be very careful about scheduling my sleep. And it is important because as a shift worker, Tom is probably getting about 7 hours less sleep per week than another 49-year-old guy working the same job who only works day shift. So the important thing to understand is as a shift worker, you're not getting as much sleep as the individual who's doing the same job who's not doing shift work. So that in and of itself puts you at a disadvantage right away. Now, there are some individuals who do very well with shift work. They can deal with the changing shifts and whatnot. Most of us do better when we're young. And as we get a little bit older, we tend to have much more difficulty with it. So I'm not sure. Tom, how long have you been doing the job you do right now?
About a year.
Were you doing shift work types of things before that time?
Well, actually, this is a combination of two jobs. So I work during the week in the daytime and then on the weekends.
Gotcha.
Overnight. Yep. So it's a shift on a regular basis. And what I find is as I approach that turnover, that's probably when I have that lapse in sleep time as I convert to the overnight shift.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think that there's a couple points to be made here. Number one, I think the economy in 2012 has pushed a lot more people into Tom's role than we've seen in the past. Individuals are having to take on more responsibility and more jobs to make ends meet, to make that mortgage payment. So as a clinician, when I talk to these individuals, I feel it's my duty to say to somebody like Tom, look, if you're struggling with this shift, you need to stop. And Tom's going to look at me and say, well, geez, I drove all the way here to your clinic to have you tell me that. I can't stop. I need this second job. And at that point, as a clinician, I'm faced with what a lot of doctors are faced with. You've got Tom or somebody very similar to Tom in your office who's telling you, look, I've got to work these hours to make ends meet. How can you help me? And there are definitely things that we can do to help you, not only in terms of helping you with your shifts and arranging your sleep schedule, but also, most importantly, in 2012, we have FDA-approved medications that are specifically designated for shift work disorder. So these medications can be used either on a somewhat permanent basis or in those transitions that you're referring to, Tom, where you feel like going from this shift to that is very difficult. It's easy for some people to stay up a little bit later than their typical bedtime. It becomes a very difficult thing when somebody says, look, you need to go to bed right now at 3:30 in the afternoon to get ready for your shift tonight. We can't just tell our body to suddenly become sleepy. So between using medications that can help with initiating sleep, and medications that can help you feel more awake, we can not only make you more successful at dealing with these shifts, but to be honest with you, Tom, make you more safe at what you do. Because the bottom line is when you're driving home at 6 o'clock in the morning, having been up all night, your body is very driven to sleep. And we see a lot of automobile accidents in individuals who are shift workers. So for somebody like you, I would talk to your primary care doctor and say, look, you know, I heard this guy on the radio and he said there are some medications that might be able to make this shift work situation I'm in right now much more bearable and safer for me. And the other thing too is, and it sort of goes beyond the scope of our show today, but we've also talked to patients and their employers about saying, look, let's look at the way you design your shifts for your employees. Are there ways we can get the same amount of hours covered, but in a way that's a lot less taxing on your employees? And usually employers are very happy to do this because they're losing millions in terms of individuals calling in sick and all the health-related problems that go along with shift work. So anything they can do to rearrange the schedule and make it more employee-friendly, they're often happy to do. And we've certainly done that for companies in this area.
Dr. Winter, do you feel comfortable mentioning what some of these medications are and
how
they work?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, certainly. So one of the most common right now is a drug called Nuvigil. Its drug name is armodafinil. It's made by Cephalon Pharmaceuticals, and this is a drug that has been around for a bit. Its older form called Provigil has been around even longer. These were drugs that were traditionally used for narcolepsy, and they're very helpful in these individuals who are excessively sleepy. But in recent years, they've also gotten other indications through the FDA for not only individuals who have sleep apnea who continue to be sleepy despite the treatment of their sleep apnea. So if you're somebody who has a CPAP device but continue to fall asleep at inopportune times, this drug could be helpful to you. But like I mentioned to Tom, shift work disorder. So now these medications can be prescribed for individuals who work non-traditional shifts. You don't have to be somebody who works overnight to qualify for these drugs. If you work non-traditional shifts, and you feel sleepy during the day, and you feel this is impacting the quality of your life, not only either at home with your family or at work, these medications can be absolutely lifesavers to certain people. So absolutely talk to your doctor about these drugs. Mention them by name. It's very possible that your primary care doctor has no idea that they even exist, and maybe it doesn't. If they know they exist, they may still be thinking of them as, oh, that narcolepsy drug, when in fact they have much more current indications.
Tom, thanks so much for your call. Charlottesville-based sleep treatment specialist Chris Winter is our guest. All of a sudden, all of our phone lines have gotten open. So let me remind you, in case you've been thinking about calling, that this would be a good time to dial 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. Here on Facebook, this question from Teresa: I never seem to get enough sleep. When I wake up, I stay tired most of the morning. Even after sleeping 7 or 8 hours, my body seems to drag. What could be the problem?
That's a great question, Teresa, and maybe I should whisper the answer because it seems like everybody who's listening to the show has suddenly fallen asleep, which is great.
Well,
I take
we
that
had
as
several
a compliment.
Calls that hung up. I didn't know if they needed to go get a nap or what.
Yeah, that's great. all this talk of sleep. So Teresa's brings up something we see a lot of, and that's an individual saying, look, I feel like I'm sleeping enough, but I continue to, and she uses the word drag, and I think that drag is the word I'd like to focus the attention on here. What does it mean when Teresa says she's dragging? What does it mean when Sally says she's pooped, or Maeve says she's completely fatigued, or Tice or Cam say they're exhausted? These are words that individuals use all the time that mean different things. And what we want to do as a sleep expert is to say, let's figure out if an individual is truly sleepy or not. So the question I would have to directed to Teresa is, when you say you drag after getting 7 or 8 hours of sleep, what do you mean by that? Do you mean like a football player at the end of a football game that you feel fatigued, that you're sitting there in your living room on your couch looking at a pile of laundry and you just do not have the energy to get up from the couch and fold it and put it away? Or are you saying, Teresa, that even after 7, 8 hours of sleep, you get up, you have breakfast, you sit down in your cubicle at work, and you literally fall asleep?
So there's a difference between
being sleepy,
and being fatigued.
Yes, and we'll get into that after the break, because I think it's extremely important.
Good, and we now have several more calls. So those of you on the line, please be patient. We will get to you shortly. We have a couple lines still open. If you want to get in on the wait to talk with Dr. Chris Winter about sleep, then do dial in at 888-967-2825. We'll be back in just a bit more than 1 minute. William Christopher Winter. I'm not sure I'm supposed to give that away, but anyway, Chris Winter is a medical doctor, a neurologist who both studies and treats sleep disorders. He's the founder and president of the Charlottesville Neurology and Sleep Medicine Clinic. He also serves as director of the Sleep Medicine Center at Martha Jefferson Hospital in Charlottesville. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight, Sleepiness versus Fatigue.
Yep. When you said my name that way, I thought I was in trouble. So. Visions of my grandmother. Sleepiness versus fatigue, I think, is probably one of the most important concepts for people to understand. And so what I mean by that is this. If an individual, Teresa, I'm speaking to you, Teresa, how likely would it be if you were sitting in a waiting room reading a magazine to fall asleep? or how likely would it be if you were the passenger in a car for an hour to fall asleep or engage in a conversation with somebody to fall asleep? So if the answer to those questions for you, Teresa, or anybody listening is that, oh, I would definitely fall asleep reading a book or magazine in a waiting room, I would definitely fall asleep as the passenger in the car for an hour, and you know what? I would probably fall asleep having a conversation with somebody, then you are truly excessively sleepy. You might be fatigued too, but you are definitely sleepy. And the way we define sleepiness is how driven are you to sleep? Just like if I were to walk into my waiting room and see somebody looking around in my trash can for something to eat, knowing nothing about that patient, I would say, wow, that person is extremely hungry. They are extremely driven to eat because they're looking for food in a trash can. So
sleepy means that I must be sleep deprived. Fatigue does not necessarily
exactly.
mean
so sleep if you deprived. Were sleepy, you were either not getting enough sleep. And in Teresa's case, if she's to be believed, she's getting 7 or 8 hours of sleep a night. So that should be plenty for her, most likely. So the question for Teresa would be, if she's truly sleeping 7 or 8 hours and she's feeling sleepy the next day, then there is something intrinsically wrong with her sleep, and she should probably have a sleep study or at least talk to a sleep expert.
It could be something that where she feels like she's asleep, but she's not really resting
exactly.
deeply.
Sleep apnea patients. Exactly.
Some sort of restless limb movement or
exactly.
something.
Okay. Exactly. Or even
but
something like narcolepsy.
The fatigue thing could be a completely
different
separate
thing. So the book on fatigue is vast and large. So if she's saying, no, I don't really feel sleepy during the day. In fact, in none of these circumstances, even circumstances if I were to lay down and take a nap, I would not fall asleep during the day, Chris. Then what we're probably talking about somebody who's feeling like they're getting enough sleep. They're not terribly sleepy during the day, but she's dragging. She's probably feeling fatigued. What could be the problem? Perhaps she's vitamin D deficient. Perhaps she has celiac disease. Perhaps her B12 levels are low, or she's hypothyroid. She could have a tick bite. She could have MS. She could be depressed, a medication side effect. There are so many things that can cause a person to feel fatigued that what we want to do as a sleep expert, as a sleep clinic, or me as a sleep expert, is to figure out and get back to your primary care doctor that sleep is or is not the problem. Check that off the list, and let's move on to the next thing that could be causing her to feel fatigued, because as I see it, her sleep looks like it's pretty good.
Next call coming in from Greenville, Haas. Thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question, your comment for Dr. Chris Winter, please.
All right. So I appreciate you taking my call. Very fortunate that I used to have, well, I'm not fortunate I used to, but it is good that it was used to, have lots of sleep trouble sleeping at home, but I gave up caffeine, exercised more, and developed better habits. And at home, I sleep like a baby. I'm really fortunate now. But when I go on vacation or if I sleep in a hotel, anywhere away from home, I just can't sleep. So I take an Ambien to go to sleep when I'm on vacation. What is it that's going on in my brain that's making me not want to sleep at home? I mean, when I'm away from home.
It's a great, great question, great comment. There's probably a lot of things that go along with that. Number one, I think most people don't sleep particularly well when they're away from home. Every now and then we'll have somebody have a sleep study when they come back to our office. My standard question is, so how was your night? And if somebody says to me, that was the best night of sleep I've ever gotten, wow, I felt great. I'm thinking to myself, you know, this individual sleeping in a bed that's not his own. He's got technicians watching him on a camera and these little wires taped to his head. Why on earth would that make his sleep better than what he's getting at home? So it's rare, but we'll see that sometimes. So a lot of times when people change up environments, they're going to sleep worse. It's very rare to be in a hotel room or on vacation and sleep better. Part of it is the fact that we're sort of aware that we're not in our standard situation. We all tend to wake up during the night, whether we remember it or not. I'm always aware of the fact that when I go camping, I feel like I wake up a lot more during the night. Am I waking up more, or am I just aware of the fact that I'm not in my own bed? I'm not sure. So, you know, I think that to some degree, what you're describing is not particularly unusual, and it's okay to take Ambien in those types of situations if you feel like you need to. I don't tend to like sleep aids as a rule for individuals just to take. But if you're saying to me, look, I sleep great at home, but when I sleep in the beach house once a year, I don't sleep particularly well. If I travel, I'm in a hotel, I don't sleep particularly well. So Ambien's fine. If that works for you, I have no real big problem with that. I think there's other things that you can do too. One thing that we use a lot with our athletes is the smell, the sense of smell is incredibly tied into our brain, in particular our memory. You walk into a room and you smell apple pie and it reminds you what your grandmother made decades ago, or you walk through a mall and a girl passes you and she's wearing a cologne of a girl you dated when you were in high school and immediately think about that person.
So
smells cause memory. So there's some evidence that shows that lavender may cause sleep, but the biggest way to use the lavender, you get these little lavender pillow sprays, is you want to use it in your home all the time. So every now and then, keep some on your bedside table, spray your pillow, so you get used to your pillow having that lavender scent. And then when you go to the beach next summer, take that pillow and that lavender spray with you. So everything about the place where you're sleeping is foreign. However, what your head feels on that pillow and what your nose smells when you sleep is very familiar, and you'll find that that is extremely helpful in terms of creating a sense of home and familiarity with your new sort of foreign environment. It will help your sleep quite a bit.
Haas, thanks so much for your call. Chris, I want to ask you if you could really briefly to give us a synopsis of what a sleep study is.
Sure.
Because we've got only about 8 minutes left and several people waiting to talk to you.
Yep. So a sleep study, I can give you a sense of what it's like to come into the Martha Jefferson Sleep Medicine Center, which is the sleep center I direct. We actually have our sleep center in a very nice Hilton hotel. And there's a lot of centers that do that now because we want you to be as comfortable as possible with your sleep study. So what will happen is if you have a study done at the sleep center, you'll show up there on 7 or 8 o'clock at night on the night of your choosing. We do them every night of the week. Wear whatever you want to wear. You can bring whatever you want to bring. If you like books or you want to watch TV, there's a big screen TV in the room. So you're going to walk in and think, wow, this looks just like a hotel, a really nice hotel room. And in fact, it is. And when you get there, there'll be a very nice technician who comes out and she will get you sort of comfortable. And then when it's time for you to go to bed, whenever you feel like you want to go to bed, people always think they have to go to bed as soon as they get there and they don't. When you feel like you're ready to go to sleep, the technician will come in and she will tape or glue some little wires to various parts of your body. None of them hurt. None of them are uncomfortable or embarrassing. And then you sleep. And everybody always says, well, what if I don't sleep during a sleep study? And that almost never happens. I mean, you don't have to sleep well to have a great sleep study. Chances are you're going to sleep much better than you think you would under the circumstances. When you wake up the next day, that same very nice technician will walk in. She will take the little wires off your body and you're free to go. During the night, you can move around as much as you want. You can get and go to the bathroom. You're not tethered to the bed like Frankenstein on the platform.
But again, because we've got these other callers, I'm going to try and get to what you've gotten from those wires being attached to computer readouts is a whole bunch of information that will tell you and the technicians what has been going on during the
night.
Absolutely,
yep.
And then you meet with the person later and say, you do have sleep apnea, you don't, you have some limb disorder,
you have seizures,
something else
you grind your teeth, you move your legs around, you act out your dreams. So the meeting after the sleep study is usually a lot of fun. I mean, it's a very interesting thing to see in detail what it is you do when you sleep at night, because most people think they know, but I can assure you, you don't.
Lisa, who has been patiently waiting. Also, I guess she's been pulled off the highway someplace, been driving along 81. Lisa, thanks for calling in. Your question, your comment for sleep researcher and treatment specialist, Dr. Chris Winter.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My problem is I'll lay down at night and I'll be ready to fall asleep. My body will be, almost asleep, but it seems like my brain keeps jerking me awake.
Okay. Well, that could be a couple things. When you say the word jerking, do you mean that you're sort of falling asleep and maybe have sort of a half dream, half little hallucination, and then you kind of jerk yourself awake?
Yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah, so that can be something we call hypnic myoclonus, or sleep start, some people call them. They usually happen in individuals who are sort of excessively sleepy. I always dream that somebody's tossing me a ball, or I'm getting ready to take a step off of a curb. And then as I make that step, it kind of jerks me awake, and my wife looks at me like I'm from another planet, and I smile and go right back to sleep. So if that's what's happening, that's sort of normal. If you're having so many jerks that it's really preventing you from falling asleep despite the fact that you feel sleepy, perhaps you have something like restless leg syndrome, or you're having little periodic limb movements during the night. This is common in individuals, particularly women, in the 30-ish range. Tends to run in families and can be very disruptive to an individual's ability to fall asleep and to stay asleep effectively. So perhaps that's going on with you.
This is one of the things that you uncover in a sleep study.
It can be. You know, a lot of times with individuals, if they give a story that's good enough, we'll just go ahead and treat them without doing a sleep study. And if they come back and say, wow, you know, that little pill I take before I go to bed has made a huge difference in terms of my ability to get to sleep and the quality of my sleep, then we just pat ourselves on the back and assume we were right.
And the pill in this case might be for something like
restless leg. And there are four FDA-approved treatments for restless leg that are available right now. They're very easy to use. They're typically very inexpensive and safe. And when they work, wow, they really work.
Lisa, thanks so much for your call. Robert, thanks for calling in on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Dr. Chris Winter, please.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My question is this. My wife is just now been in menopause for about 2 years now.
Yes.
And she suffers from severe flashes at night. She could have five or six at a, you know, over the course of the evening, which wakes her up, interrupts her sleep. And so do you have any suggestions what can be done? Are there any medications, over-the-counter type of medications or anything else
Sure.
that can alleviate this?
To my knowledge right now, I don't think there are any FDA-approved drugs specifically for hot flashes. And, you know, if there's a caller who thinks that I'm wrong, please correct me. But there are certainly a lot of medications that are being used in that vein. Some of the SSRIs are used, the antidepressant sort of selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. So there are medications available to her that could be helpful. One thing that you might want to tell your wife to look into is something called a cool gel mat. There are some companies that make mats now that fit over your mattress but under your bottom sheet. And they typically reduce an individual's body temperature by 2 to 4 degrees at night. So when she rolls over on top of the mat is extremely cooling, and they can be very helpful for people who have hot flashes at night. We've given them out to people in our clinic and usually get very positive feedback from them. And a lot of people don't like the fact that they're not having to take yet another drug for it. So if they're primarily bothering her at night, that might be something she wants to look into.
Robert, thanks so much. Chris, calling us from somewhere near Raphine. You're on the air with Dr. Chris Winter. Your question or comment, please.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I drive a truck, so naturally my sleep schedule's a whole lot different from the average person. I might sleep 4 or 5 hours a night. Some days I'm forced to take a break during the day, which I can't sleep at all. But my problem is when I get home on weekends, if I sleep more than 6 hours at a time, I wake up with a god-awful headache. I feel like I run into a brick wall. And what is there anything I can do about that where I can actually get a good night's sleep? I think my body's set up where I function better if I only have 4 or 5 hours of sleep as opposed to the average person having 8 hours.
Yep, Chris, I feel you. And we deal with individuals like you on a very regular basis. There's so many things I would like to say to you. The question really becomes, number one, you're a truck driver. Your sleep is very broken up. Number one is, Chris, you need to make sure that your sleep is excellent. So I think talking to your doctor, making sure you've covered that, I think a sleep study would be a very smart thing for you, because if you're going to put yourself through the kind of schedule you're putting yourself through and drive a truck, the last thing I want you to be doing is harboring something like sleep apnea, which incidentally will often cause individuals to wake up with a headache. My guess is your headaches have more to do with the fact that your brain, because you have no real set schedule, really isn't sure what it's supposed to be doing at any time during, you know, given time during the day. You know, right now it's almost 4 o'clock. My brain knows that every day at 4 o'clock, I'm awake and usually seeing patients. You know, on Saturday and Sunday, I'm awake dealing with my kids, but I'm awake and moving around. At 4 o'clock, you could be behind the wheel of your truck having driven for 8 hours. You could be trying to get some sleep in your cab. I mean, it's sort of a crapshoot when it comes to long distance drivers or shift workers like you, what they're supposed to be doing at any given time. So this idea that you're getting 4 and 5 hours of sleep at one point, then all of a sudden making up for it with a bigger, you know, cycle of sleep often creates something we call sleep inertia or sleep drunkenness. And everybody's experienced this. You know, you want to take a 30-minute nap on a weekend. You lay down to take that nap and 2 hours pass because nobody wakes you up. You wake up, you've got a dull headache, you feel fuzzy, and you're thinking to yourself, God, I felt better before I took this nap than I did after. And I think that that could be happening to you too a lot. So trying to be very disciplined about your schedule as much as you can, maybe using some medications to help you deal with your shift work would be my suggestion. I'd love to talk to you about that more and get you feeling better.
Robert, thanks so much for your call. Chris, I got this whole list of questions that I didn't get the chance to get to, so let me ask just one from the list.
Yeah.
In 30 seconds, what can you tell us about your work with athletes around the world?
I can tell you that my work with athletes around the world, athletes are no different than they're no different from Chris. They're being asked to sleep at certain times and be awake at certain times. The only thing about these athletes are they're incredibly measured and scrutinized, and so we just really work hard to make sure that they're dealing with travel in effective ways, that they're not getting too excited before a game or a match, and we're helping them sleep effectively. And all the things we talked about with these individuals today, we're just doing it on a little bit more amplified scale with these individuals.
And what comes up next for you is teams that you work for in the NBA and the
NBA and the National Hockey League. Their camps will get going. And then before you know it, we'll be back in Florida, right?
And you must be getting plenty of sleep because you remembered that Chris was the last caller, not Robert. So, Chris, thank you so much for having called in. Our guest has been the founder of the Charlottesville Neurology and Sleep Medicine Clinic, as well as director of the Sleep Medicine Center at Martha Jefferson Hospital in Charlottesville, Dr. Chris Winter. Chris, thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome.
You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And if you go to that page, you'll find links to more information about the work that Dr. Winter is doing. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.